Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to, except this time out where I finished the book 2 weeks ago and I'm only just now recording the podcast. The reason for that is that I was I finished this book as an audiobook on the beginning of a trip across the UK from Germany where I live. And I was visiting family and meeting all his friends at the British Juggling Convention, where I was also helping organise some events and perform. And I was very busy then for the next week at that event and travelling. And when I got home, I was very busy with other things. And I had other books to read and other podcasts to get ready for and record. So it's only now, 2 weekends later, where I actually get round to finishing the review of this, or recording the review of this. So the reason... the book that I'm reading is... Oh, another thing that's a bit annoying is that I got about 20 minutes into this review and Audacity, which is the program that I use to record this, crashed, and it very rarely crashes. This is probably the second time ever in 229 episodes that Audacity has crashed on me and I've lost a recording, at least that I can remember. So some of these notes that I made as I went through weren't very clear in my brain, but now they're much more clear in my brain because I've already talked about this. I've already done this introduction in the first half of this review, which is a bit annoying. But here we go, second time through. So the book that I'm reading, or I read, and now I'm reviewing, is called Dream Snake, and it's by Vonda N. McIntyre. And the reason I'm reviewing this, or I read this book, is I was just looking for something to read, and I thought, well, hey, let's check out the books that have won both the Nebula Award and the Hugo Award. They're the two most prestigious science fiction / fantasy prizes out there, and the books that have won both are obviously, there's like two bars that are set there for quality, and they've got to pass both of them. So I thought, well, these are probably some of the best known books. And I looked through the list. I think there was 22 books which have won both. I've read all but five or six of them. I think six, including this book now that I've read, or five. Now it's only five that I've not read. Or four, maybe. I've got a list here. So anyway, I was looking through this list, and back in the 1960s and 70s, are the books that have won both the Nebula and the Hugo Award is stuff like Dune and Left Hand of Darkness and Ringworld, Rendezvous with Rama, Dispossessed, Forever War, Gateway, Fountains of Paradise, a bit later on, what's that, Neuromancer, Ender's Game, that kind of stuff. All of these books are still generally well known as like the classics of science fiction from that time period, and are quite well known, and of course I've read these books. But there was one that stuck out in the middle of these books in the late 70s, early 80s kind of era. One that I hadn't read at all and didn't really know about, and it didn't really, you know, the name didn't stand out there at all. It's Dream Snake by Vonda N. McIntyre. And I was wondering, why isn't this book still like well known? Why isn't it still held up as a great like classic of 1970s science fiction, like The Forever War, The Dispossessed, Rendezvous with Rama, Ringworld, you know, Left Hand of Darkness, there's some Ursula K. Le Guin, you know, it's not all just guys there. This is written by a female author. I was like, well, it can't be just there, because there's other books around about the same. There's lots of female authors that come through in these Hugo Awards and Nebula Awards. So what is it about this book? Why isn't it more well known? And after reading it, I can't really say why or why not. It's not any better or worse than any of those other books in the list, but it was good to tick off the list here. So this book was written, like I say, in 1978 and won the 1979 Hugo Awards and Nebula Awards. Two awards back then. And so it's... what do I do now? The notes. Yeah, so the setting of this... I'm a bit confused because I've already done all of this bit already and I'm forgetting what I recorded last time and what I said this time. So there's the world. The world building of a book like this. It's what I really enjoyed about this book is that the world is very slowly revealed to us. And the world itself is interesting enough, but like I say, the portrayal of the world, like how it's written, what's going on, you know, like with the characters and how it's very slowly revealed to us. As it starts out, there's a character and she's going through and she turns up at this village and I was like, well, is this a fantasy book? You know, are we in a secondary world? Is this not Earth, but it's not set in our universe? It's not in our timeline? Or is it in the past? Or is it, you know, in the future, in the far future, on a different world? Maybe it's out of Mars because she's going across a, you know, across a, like a desert and there's a wasteland. Or is it a different place? Or what's going on? And slowly it's revealed that, ah, this is actually post-apocalyptic in the same kind of way as the chrysalids or Canticle for Leibowitz or something like that. It's, you know, bombs have dropped. Now, years after the bombs have dropped, there's communities and towns spread thinly across North America. It might not be North America. It could be Europe. I'm not entirely sure where it's spread. But somewhere on Earth, there is lots of small communities spread thinly. And they don't fight among each other because they don't need to. There's no lack of resources. You know, everyone seems to be getting on with it. But there's lots of different levels of technology. There's quite futuristic technology mixed in with old, styly, kind of more fantasy, medieval kind of technology. And also, as it goes through, some alien technology is hinted at, or some spacer technology. So you're thinking there could be some people up in space still surviving, and they're sending stuff down to Earth or wanting to get stuff up from Earth. Again, it's hinted at only slightly. And like I say, the revealing of the revelation of the world, I think is really amazing. Unlike a lot of stories where it's like, ah, now someone has to go on a quest. And let me tell you about the places that you have to go on this quest. You have to go from this place, and here's a map. And then you go across to that hill, up and down this range of mountains, across to the sea. And when you're at the sea, you turn left or turn north and go up here. And then you'll meet this person. They kind of lay out the world, or the world building is done at the start of the book. Or like if it's a science fiction book, it's like, okay, and then they went down and landed on this planet, and this is what the planet looked like from the air, and this is what the planet looked like, and then they get down closer, and this is what the geography was around here. But in this book, everything is revealed as the character thinks about it, or as the character needs to know it, or as we as readers need to know it. And that is actually quite refreshing. So what else have I got here in my notes? Yeah, so here's a quote from someone else who's read this book on Goodreads. He's an SFBRP listener, or he's my friend on on Goodreads, so I guess he listens. Named Tudor. His little bit of a review is, as with all post-apocalyptic books by women, this one has a wonderful, gentle tone. Maybe it's because men always cause the destruction of the world, so their story must be a redemptive one. The stories about women are much more about healing and remembering. And that's very much it, but it certainly comes across here as well, about healing and remembering. And, you know, as she remembers stuff, as our main character remembers stuff about the past, it's, you know, and about the world, it's revealed to us. And it's about healing in a literal sense as well, in a metaphorical and literal sense, in an emotional and physical sense, or physiological sense. Because our main character is a healer. And healers, as it's revealed as we go through, healers come from a place called Healer Town, Healer Central. And the healers are spread out from this like central hospital community, medical school community, around the different communities and throughout the world. And the way it works is, as it's revealed as we go through the book, is that when a healer turns up to a community, the community's job is to kind of tempt them and to treat them really well, and kind of tempt them with a, hey, you can live with us and make sure our community is really healthy, and we'll give you a house, and we'll make sure you're fed, and we'll look after you, and you can have your pick of the horses, and you can have your pick of the good-looking girls and guys here to have sex with if you want to. Yay, great, everyone who lives happily ever after, healer, come and live in our community, please. And that happens to our main character a few times as she goes through. She's like, yeah, but you don't need a full-time healer. I can just come here and give the vaccine to these people and give the antidotes and treat the thing. You don't need a full-time healer. I need to head out into the world and heal more people elsewhere. So that's kind of the one of the main, I wouldn't say one of the main routes of commerce or trade or anything like that, but that is one of the things that kind of holds the world together, all these different communities. The healers and the tradesmen are the ones that kind of pass between them and kind of glue the world together. It doesn't matter kind of what different cultures, or not different cultures, like the different rules and different social kind of setups that they have, the healers have to kind of just fit in with them all together. So our story follows a character called Snake, who is a healer, and uses snakes to heal. And that's the quirky thing about these healers, is that they have snakes. And our healer is called Snake, which is very, very confusing. For the first chapter, I constantly couldn't work out what was going on, because Snake picks up a snake called Grass, which isn't a grass snake, it's a dream snake. And then she picks out the rattlesnake called Sand. Snake picks up sand, which is a sand-colored rattlesnake from the sand called Sand. And then she has a cobra, which is called Mist, who sometimes sprays a mist, and Snake called the cobra, which was called Mist, over to her. And it's just constantly going on about Snake, and it's like this real big mix-up between the name, which is a noun capitalized, which makes Snake, and this is an audiobook, so I'm really confused. I don't even see if it's capitalized. And so, you know, so there's lots of different stuff going on here. A snake called Grass, which isn't a grass snake, is actually a dream snake. A snake called Sand, which is a rattlesnake, and a snake called Mist, which is a cobra, and the healer called Snake, who uses the snakes and calls the snakes and does stuff in the sand. Often the snake called Sand is in the sand. Anyway. So, and later on in the book, actually, there's another person called North, and it took me a while to work out that North was actually a person's name, because North is a word. North is another noun. And so it's like, oh, we have to go to North. And I was like, okay, go to North. That means they're heading North. Oh, no, where is North? Oh, North is over there to the west. And I was like, okay, which way are they heading to North? Like, if they're heading towards North, which way are they heading? Oh, they're heading west. Could have been east. But it wasn't North. And that was very confusing later on in the book. And some of the other names are a little bit confusing as well. I noticed somebody else in their Goodreads review mentioned that there's a mismatch of different names. Some of them feel quite modern, like from our world, like Melissa and Jesse and Gabriel. And there's some others like Stravan and Aravin and other names which feel a more fantasy world. So I do think the naming in this book is a little bit confusing. Anyway, so Snake loses a snake. She loses a snake called Grass, which isn't a grass snake, it's a dream snake. And it turns out that dream snakes are very hard to breed, and they have to be like genetically implanted into eggs or genetically manipulated and stuff like that. And there is a lack of dream snakes. There are too few dream snakes in the world. And actually, that's the limiting factor on how many healers there can be. And that's a big deal. It's a big deal. How many dream snakes there are is a big deal. And at the beginning of the book, Snake, like I say, she loses her dream snake, and she has to get her dream snake back. And that's, I guess, why the book is called Dream Snake. But for a lot of the book, there is no dream snake. But she does have her rattlesnake and her cobra, Mist and Sand. So she travels through the mists and across the sands to different communities. And like I say, she meets lots of different people, cures lots of people, is attacked by someone. Someone's following her. Who's the person who's following her? And then she has sex with people. And there's someone who she doesn't have sex with, who she meets at the beginning of the book, Aravin, I think his name is. And he goes, I've got to go down and find her and apologize to her because she lost her snake in our community and we should have looked after it better, blah, blah, blah. So the whole story just starts with her losing her dream snake, and it ends with, of course, you're thinking, well, the book is called Dream Snake. It's not, so it starts with her losing it. Is it going to end with her getting back a dream snake or getting another dream snake? And of course, that's her quest. That's what she does. She says, I need to go back and get a new dream snake before I get back to Healer Central, because I can't turn up there having lost a dream snake. So that's the whole focus of the book. And I did enjoy the story. Overall, I thought it was a very slow-paced, very calm pace, which I quite like. It is probably partly due to this being a novella at one point and it being expanded out. And it is very episodic as well. She goes here and meets these people, and then she leaves, and then it goes on here, which, again, is actually, I think it's a flaw in the book if I was to sit down and read it all the way through. But it did mean that there were some very nice stopping places and pausing places. Like, I'd read up and it's like, and then she left that community, and then the next chapter would start. And then she arrived in this one. I was like, oh, I'll just pause there because I know some new adventures are going to start and we're going to meet new people. She's going to do different jobs and things. So, Snake. What was I going to say here? Dream Snake, yeah. Is it really so... This is a note I made. Is it really so important? Because it seems like Snake can do her job with her other two snakes, not just the Dream Snake. The Rattlesnake, Mist and Sand seem to be able... The way it works is that she feeds the snakes different, like, chemicals or something, and then they kind of do stuff to the chemicals inside the body and create drugs, which, these are genetically modified snakes anyway, but then these genetically modified snakes, like, synthesize drugs inside them, and then she gets the snakes to bite other people, bite her patients, and the patients, all works out. And they get the drugs that they need. And it seems like, and I know this is weird, but it seems like these other snakes do the job pretty well. It's like they don't. What does the dream snake do? Well, it causes people to dream. It's like an LSD injector or a morphine injector. I'm not entirely sure how to say it, but it obviously makes people very calm. Yeah, maybe a morphine injector kind of thing. So if someone's about to die, it means they can die in a very calm, painless way. And if someone's in a lot of pain, she can give them this, and it gives them really nicely and things. You know, and it causes like ecstatic visions, maybe. I'm not entirely sure, because for most of it, she doesn't have a dream snake. So, but what it seems to me is that this snake doesn't seem to be that important. She seems to be able to do a job without it. And I was thinking, is this a plot hole? That the whole thing revolves around how important this dream snake is, and yet she gets on well enough without it. Like, how important can it really be? And then I was thinking, well, maybe it's more of a symbolic thing, like a false scarcity kind of thing, where, like, the dream snake isn't that important, but it is an artificial, like a known artificially limiting factor on how many healers there are. Because if there was too many healers, the healers that there were there wouldn't be looked after very well. And it's like, okay, the more scarce drugs are, the more valuable they become. The more scarce good health is, the more valuable it becomes to the people who need it, and then more valuable to the people who are being provided it, if you know what I mean. So I was thinking, is this a plot hole, or is this clever world building that even Snake doesn't understand? Snake, the main character, doesn't even understand. So story, okay, pretty good. For its flaws, it gets by, even with its flaws. So other things that I liked about this book, I like the tone. Like I say, it's very non-combative. The world is pleasant. I read that thing out before from Goodreads, from Tudor. So the main goal of the main character is almost unrelentingly positive, which is a note I made. I like the mix of technology and the snakes. Also I quite like just got a text message. What I also like is the social setup that as she goes between different places. Again, this is world building, but it does play into the story, like how things are set up in terms of relationships. You know, it's not just the normal relationships. Of course, this is science fiction from the 1970s. So in the 60s and 70s, it's all like, oh yeah, three-way relationships, let's have free sex and everyone's free and stuff like that, which is quite refreshing to read about, like adult people having adult relationships and non, like platonic relationships with sex, or like non emotional relationships but with sex thrown in, which is not a problem, because in the future people are like, humans are kind of like genetically modified, or there's a way that they can control their, not their urges, but they can control their fertility just by the power of their mind. Everyone has this way of thinking, and it turns on the control. And the control is to make sure you can have sex without the chance of procreation. And there is a you know, some storyline around here and some characters who don't have this control or haven't been trained. And I was thinking, well, even if they don't have that control or they haven't been trained, what about some? Is there other kinds of birth control? Do condoms not exist anymore? Are condoms not needed? Like, is there no sexually transmitted disease? And then I was thinking, oh, this is probably a pre-AIDS book, when the only downside of having sex with someone would be to, well, not the only, but the main downside of having sex with someone isn't going to be, oh, you're going to catch a disease and it's going to kill you, like AIDS, which came around a few years after this book was written. Or is it more of a, you know, is it going to be... So I just got another text message. I should turn that phone off. Or is it going to be not have babies? And it seems like they probably in this was written in a time when not having babies was the main thing that they wanted to not have, or to yeah. Anyway, condoms would probably have solved a lot of problems in this book as well. So what else have I got here? Yeah. So other things that I liked is the characters. While some of them aren't, I mean, none of the characters are that complex, I do actually like them. Again, it's really nice to read books about nice people with good problems, having, you know, like interesting problems to solve, which aren't about, hey, can I kill this thing? I want that thing. How many people can I punch in the face until I get it? And it's quite nice to have more human problems. About, you know, there's a relationship that we need to sort out, there's someone here that needs healing, these people have to make up, there's a trade dispute here, you know, it's not all about who's the villain. Although there are some villains in this book, but there is actually a part of the book which I thought was a bit, let's get on to some things that I didn't like. It seems like for the main character, everything is a little bit too easy. Even the stuff which is really quite grim, like there's this stuff which is about child abuse and rape, and you think, oh, this is really bad. But, like, the main character is kind of perfect, but not perfect in a bad way. I don't mind someone who's very competent. I don't mind. It's like, oh, she is called Snake, and Snake is a very rare name for healers. Not many healers have been called Snake. Why not? Because it's a very prestigious name. She's obviously very good at her job. And I like reading about competent characters being competent at their jobs and doing stuff. But she's young and she's naive, but that's okay. The naivety works well in her favours and sometimes it backfires against her. But she's just, like I say, unrelentingly good intention-wise and unrelentingly good at everything that she does. And, like, she always gets what she wants, except, of course, the Dream Snake. But we know that, like I said, that's already the course. Like, she's not going to, like, every time that she wants a Dream Snake, that's not going to be easy for her. But everything else seems to kind of fall into place. And there's a love interest here, and it kind of falls into place. And there's something else here, and that kind of falls into place. And then there's the, you know, like, the subplot with the... Well, it's not even a subplot, because it doesn't run through. There's the incident with the child abuse. And it's like, well, you just mentioned before, like, four pages before, us healers, we can't have children because we have got so many other stuff going on us. We're being bitten by snakes all the time, and we've got all these immunities. Our own immune system is so good that we can't have children or anything like that. What we do is we adopt people. I'm adopted myself. Everyone is adopted. Yay! Healers adopt people. Adopt people. That's what we do. We adopt people. And then, like, four pages later, someone turns up, and I was like, I bet this young girl, who is obviously in an unfortunate situation and abusive relationship, I bet she is a good candidate to be adopted. And then, like, 20 pages later, it's like, and then I will adopt you. And it's like, seems a bit easy. You know, things are quite packed. They all kind of fit together. And I know that's going to happen in an episodic kind of book. But again, it wouldn't be too bad. I mean, it's not too bad if it just didn't happen all the time, if everything wasn't easy for Snake. So it's like not a perfect main character, but the flaws, because, of course, if you've got a perfect character who's perfectly good, you need to put the flaws in. Like, as a writer, you need to put some flaws in to make her identifiable, to make her relatable. And unfortunately, her flaws is that she's just a bit, like, her flaws aren't interesting flaws, or she doesn't get over them. Like, she's very self-centered. She knows what she wants. I mean, of course, she's brought up as a healer, and you are very important. Yes, I'm very important, but she seems to kind of play off her importance a bit too much. And she's pig-headed. Like, she wants stuff, and she's pig-headed, and she gets it. But like I say, then it becomes frustrating, because her character flaw is her pig-headedness and her self-centeredness. But that's always rewarded with the stuff that she wants. Like, everything that she wants, she gets. And I want a character flaw to be a flaw that isn't rewarded, rather than a character flaw to be rewarded. So that's one thing I didn't like. Yeah, and in fact, that's actually the main thing I didn't like. Something like this episodic storytelling, which, again, it was a good thing in some ways, but doesn't hold together. The story itself isn't strongest. And then the main character, like I say, the other characters fit in perfectly. They have a role, and they do go well. Everything just kind of works out. That's no problem there. So, what else have I got to say about this? So, the themes of the book, giving up motherhood and family to be a healer. Yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, that's the only note that I have here, but I made a note to read something out from goodreads.com by Michael. This is another SFBRP listener. He says, there is a sense of hope and optimism that pervades this post-apocalyptic tale, sadly missing in most current books in that genre. Characters such as Snake sacrifice of themselves for the public good and are motivated out of a sense of compassion for the suffering of others. These are positive traits of the human spirit, and I wish more science fiction writers shared this philosophy. And that's true, and I do think this is one of those unfortunate reasons why this book doesn't stand out alongside all of these other 1970s, 1980s Nebula and Hugo Award-winning books. Like I say, reading off some of these names, like Rendezvous with Rama, I guess that's a positive book. You know, it's a different kind of thing. Dispossessed, Forever War, Fountains of Paradise, Star-Tide Rising, Neuromancer, Left Hand of Darkness, these Ringworld, these kind of books, there is just, like, I wouldn't say more important conflict, but kind of more world-changing conflict, more important in that way. And this book does kind of go out and does get a wider scope as it goes through. But it is one of those books where you just go, oh, this is like a small book about small problems, about good people doing good stuff. And even the bad people seem to be, except for, you know, like one cartoon villain who turns up near the end, even the bad people kind of are understandable, you know, maybe not the child abuser kind of guy, but as we go through, there's, like I say, it is, like I say, unrelentingly good and positive, and that's the driving force of it as we go through. There isn't a lot of adventure for its own sake. There isn't conflict for its own sake. It's all about, the conflict is like, I want to do good stuff and these people are getting in the way. And that leads to, I mean, I think it's really good and it's refreshing and it's nice to have like a post-apocalyptic non-dystopia. Like I said before, it's a bit like The Chrysalids, even though that does have dystopia and very dark tendencies in it, especially towards the end. But it's nice to have a book which is positive, which doesn't have a dark side to it. And if it does have a dark side, that's an aberration in the world. And I know that's like thematically isn't that satisfying to talk about. Oh, let's be nice to each other. Let's put in place a, and again, that's what Michael says, let's put in place universal healthcare. Why not? Why should it be limited? You know, why should there be an artificial limit to how many people can be looked after in the world? Why shouldn't we have that kind of stuff? So in some ways, it's refreshing to read it, but in other ways, I understand that that lots of people don't want to read about perfect women helping people all the time and being unrelentingly positive. It doesn't have the same impact as Ringworld or Rendezvous with Rama or something. Even though, like I say, Rendezvous with Rama is a very positive book. It's about good people, competent people being competent and doing stuff. It's just like a different tone. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about, I mean, the writing is good. Some of it is a little bit clunky. A lot of it's very, like, it reads, I mean, it was being read to me, but it does read like someone trying very hard to be poetic. And sometimes it works really well, sometimes it doesn't work as well. For example, Snake talks to her snakes, and she always calls them, like, she always refers to them as thee and thou. Thou shalt do this. What is good for that thee? Don't know which way around it works. And I'm like, well, why is that? And it wasn't explained, but there it was. And there was a few other things like that where you just go, why is this? Why are we dropping into this, like, really poetic language at this point? And then other points, it's a bit more plain. But it's not too bad overall. The dialogue between people isn't all that great, to be honest. You know, when people are having conversations, it's very, very much one tone. But that was, for me, saved by the audiobook reading. And it is, I would say, overall, the audiobook reading... Well, actually, let me bring up here now the Audible page. So, yeah, written by Vonda N. McIntyre, narrated by Anna Fields. I don't know what else she's done, but it's a very good reading. And it was very handy to have her doing the different voices of the different characters. Because, like I say, some of the way that people speak, like, this is an old man, and this is a young woman, and this is a child, and often their language that they use is very, very similar, which didn't have too much impact on me because I was listening to it. However, whoever did the audiobook recording, whoever did the production on this, did a really, really bad job in terms of dynamic range. And normally you want to have something compressed, you know, that's pretty much the only post-processing that I do on my own podcast, is make it so the quiet stuff isn't too quiet and the loud stuff isn't too quiet. Because you don't want, like, if I get close to the microphone, it gets louder. And if I get far away, it gets a bit quieter. And for you listening, you don't want that, because you don't want to be turning the volume up and down. Say if you're in a car, you don't want to be making the audio up and down, the level of the audio up and down or anything like that. However, Anna Field has got a strange way... Is it Anna Field? Let me get that name correct again. Yeah, Anna Fields has got a very strange way of reading, in that she will start a sentence, and then when she gets to the end of the sentence, she just kind of fades out. And then when she's talking about often in the last words, she just goes like, when Snake the healer was summoned, she traveled the blasted landscape with a thesa. From the venom of two, she distilled her medicines. But the most valued of the dreams, whose bite could ease her fear, and the pain of death. So she just kind of fades out at the end of these sentences. I was like, well, I can't, like, how am I meant to listen? So I either had to listen to it, like, really loud, that most of the sentences were heard. And then the rest of the sentence just kind of fade out at the end. But it wasn't like a whole sentence that faded out. It was often just like the last word. Because the last word in the sentence is just... And yeah, and that is very annoying. However, it's still worth listening to. So if you are going to listen to this, please sign up to Audible. You can get a free trial. You can also help support the SFBRP. This is the way that I afford to buy books and audiobooks and other books and ebooks and comic books. Just got some Watchmen that I'm going to read as well. The way that I afford that is by you supporting the SFBRP by going to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and sign up for a free Audible trial membership. The way it works is that you sign up and you don't need to renew at the end of a month if you don't want to. And if you don't, it doesn't matter because you still get the book. You get a free book for life. You can sign up for a gold plan and get one book a month, or you can sign up for the platinum plan, which is what I do, and get two audiobooks per month. But the way it works is you can choose from Dream Snake or any other book. Like, there's 200,000 other books, thousands and thousands of science fiction and fantasy books there. A lot of them are really amazing. What I suggest is go to the sfbrp.com and click on the episode lists. And there's a page called Episode List, and you can click on the top. I've rewritten it a bit, which is pretty cool. You can click on the top, and you can click Rating, and pick out the books with 5 stars, or 4.9 stars, or 4.75 stars, you know, the high ratings, and then go across to Audible and get those books on Audible. But please use the offer code, or go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, and that in that way you get a free audiobook like Dream Snake or anything else, and in the same way you're helping out, in the same process you're actually helping out the SFBRP and my own reading habits. So that's what you can do. So I do suggest checking out Dream Snake as an audiobook, or maybe it's easier to read as an ebook or a paperback. But it is a Hugo Award winner and a Nebula Award winner. There's, like I say, there's only 22 books of these. You might as well read them all. I say that, I haven't. But actually, I was looking through this list here, and it turns out 3 books I actually started and didn't finish, which is quite funny. So there's 4 books that I've yet to read on this list, and then 3 books which I started reading and didn't finish. And how many else of these have I read? Yeah, and then 12 that I've not reviewed. Or 5 more that I've read but not reviewed on the SFBRP. So overall, I'm going to give Dream Snake 3.5 stars, which means 2.5 stars is exactly average, which means read it or not, don't worry. 3.5 stars means it's not a great book. I think to be a great book, it has to be over 4 stars, but it's certainly a decent book, a good book, an interesting book, a historically significant book due to where it sits among these others. And among these other books, it is quite unique. It's a female author, which, again, I don't know how much I want to read into it, but it certainly has a different tone than a lot of these other kind of male science-y books. It's much more social science fiction in a good way. So, yeah, 3.5 stars. That's it from me, I think. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter, which I don't post very much there. I mainly post about SFBRP stuff and other things like that. So that's the best way to follow me. Also on goodreads.com, I really do enjoy keeping up with people's reading process progress on other books. And if you've read a book or rated a book, I really do. I always read the people's reviews of books that I've read and things like that. Like, for example, Tudor rated 4 stars, Michael 5 stars, Ziven 5 stars, Amy 2 stars, Isabel didn't rate it. And then there's lots of other things. So this book is quite highly rated among my friends, which generally works out as SFBRP listeners. So it's a 3.75 average there. And in general on Goodreads is a 3.84. So it's generally a positively reviewed book there. But yeah, do become my friend and also follow me but become my friend, and you can see my reading updates. And also join in with the group SFBRP listeners on goodreads.com, and you can chat with other people who listen to this podcast, which is very good. I'm not going to have it set up any forum or something. That's where I outsource the community functions to goodreads.com. Otherwise, you can go to sfbrp.com and click on the episode list. And I've rewritten the list so you can sort them in many ways. You can sort them by episode, author, book, title, rating, length of the podcast. You can see that the shortest podcast was number 3. At 10 minutes and 41 seconds, and the longest was number 106, which is actually not a true SFBRP. That's Earth Abides by George R. Stewart, which is actually an SFF audio podcast. But also Man in the High Castle, number 180, episode 180, Philip K. Dick, 1 hour and 40 minute discussion with me and Juliana about that. So anyway, yeah, you can check out the longest and shortest and highest rating and books and all these other kind of stuff. So check out that new functionality JavaScripty thing that I put in there. Anyway, that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.